It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
My guest this week is the International Man of Mystery. And trust me, he's earned the title. David Goldrake is a magician, speaker, and actor who speaks seven languages, which means he can make you say, how did you do that in seven different ways? So he's performed for royalty, celebrities, Fortune 500 companies. He's been performing from the Moroccan desert to right here in Las Vegas, where he has performed for many years. He's won top honors, such as the Merlin Award, and still finds time to give back through his philanthropic work. So let's talk about Las Vegas with a man who knows how to make the impossible look easy and doing it Fridays through Tuesdays at 8:30 at the new Magician's Room at the Link. And for ticket information, go to themagiciansroom.com. For everything about David, go to davidgoldrake.com. And you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ira. How are you?
Doing well. I noticed your accent is still with us. I thought that would be would be disappearing by now after all these years.
I've been working on that, but it doesn't seem to be working.
I want to talk about your great career and all the things you do. But before that, more importantly, is tell us about the Magician's Room. And you're going to be there for quite a while. But how did you connect over there? Because I love the idea of there actually being a room devoted to magic. It reminds me of the Magic Castle in a way.
Yeah, I love the concept.
Although the Magic Castle is a private club, although you can go as a guest, but the Magician's Room is a whole different concept. So why don't we start with that?
Correct, yeah. Well, the Magician's Room has been a vision of Damien Costas for a long time. And over the past 2 years, we've been in touch. We've been connecting, talking about the concept. He was trying to find the right venue. He's always been pretty focused on that venture for a while. And at the beginning of this year, I remember being in Paris in February when he called me and he said, we have the venue. Everything is pretty much ready. Are you still interested? And I said, sure, why not? So we started talking about it while I was still touring Europe, because that's what I've been doing for the past year. And then I came back in September. We looked at the venue. We decided to go for it. This is what's starting soon.
And the fact that you were touring Europe, you were still based in Las Vegas, right?
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm trying to figure out how many years you've been here, and I couldn't figure it out in my small brain. So
we started in Las Vegas in March of 2017, and that's also when I moved to Vegas. So it's almost going to be 9 years.
And still the accent. But the fact that you speak seven languages.
I apologize.
It makes you the mystery man. Yes, as we talked about in the opening. What's your favorite language?
My favorite language is actually English. Ever since I was a child, I've had this affinity for the English language. I remember starting learning English with tiny, you know, like those language books before we even had it in high school. And I think in English, I dream in English with all the mistakes, with the accent. But it's literally the language, my go-to language.
When you decided to do the Magician's Room now, because you've performed all over the world, still perform all over the world, and you have different venues, different sizes, different audiences, and different languages. So now you're going to be here performing at the Magician's Room at the Promenade Link, the Link Promenade. I always get those backwards, but it's Promenade. Do you say Promenade or Promenade?
They say the Promenade.
I do too, so I'll stick with that. So the Promenade Link, L-I-N-Q, on the Las Vegas Strip, where you're going to be performing, it's a unique venue in one sense. It's not the same as venues you've performed in, including the Tropicana many years ago, but also throughout Europe and the world. So I guess this is a long about way to ask the question, which is, do you adapt your performance to the size and shape of the room and to the audience?
Absolutely. The thing is that, as you may remember, when I was at the Tropicana, we had an 1,100-seat room. It was a phenomenal stage. And I had an amazing time for 2 years there. This room is about the fifth of the Tropicana. We have a 225-seat theater. The stage is smaller. It's pretty much, since you mentioned the Magic Castle, it's pretty much the same size as the Palace of Mystery at the Magic Castle. And since I've already performed at the Magic Castle many, many times, I had a feeling for that size of stage. And also, given the fact that having grown up in Luxembourg, which is one of the smallest countries in the world, and the stages are pretty much similar, I had to adapt. So I've learned to do big, big shows for 30,000, 50,000 spectators, and I've learned to do shows for 10, 20 spectators, and that also on those various sizes of stages. And when I saw the stage, I was able to put together a show in my head that would fit that stage, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
So it's not going to include elephants?
Not this time.
Okay. What keeps you going? I ask that because it's always a challenge. I mean, magic is not easy. I know people think it's easy, but the production of magic, the presentation of magic, and the consistency of magic, and the touring of magic, it's not an easy process, especially if you have props or you have a cast that helps in terms of the performance, and a crew that helps in terms of the performance. So what keeps you going? Because as I mentioned before we started, you look exactly the same to me. I've aged about 80 years, but you look exactly the same as when I first met you.
That's very kind of you. And it's an amazingly good question. I think no one's ever asked me that. And I think it's a very good question. I always ask that question to friends of mine who are either entrepreneurs or high-end business owners, because that's what I'm always curious about. What drives me, I think, or what keeps me going, it's... First of all, it's passion. I've been passionate about magic ever since I was a child. I started it when I was 8 years old, and I knew right then that that was going to be it. But then growing into the art and craft and performing more and more, I discovered that there's a strong sense of responsibility and a strong desire to impact people in a positive way. I've realized over the past 10 to 15 years that as my magic has matured, as my persona and me as a person have matured, my messages are more and more present in my show. My point of view becomes clearer and clearer during my shows. And I've seen how I was able to touch people over the last decades. And I think that's a very strong motivation for me. It's that passion, and it's that desire and that responsibility, that sense of responsibility to share something, to impact people, and to convey a message to the people.
It's interesting because if you think about it, it is a dual track you're on. On the one hand, you're maturing, as you talked about it. You're developing your art and your skills after a year. And at the same time, you realize what the real magic is, which is on the other track, which is connecting with people and having an impact on people.
Absolutely. That's very accurate. Thank you. That's very well articulated.
Thank you. I'll send you a check. Oh, no, the other way.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, do you find that, is there one particular illusion? I'll use illusion rather than trick in this case.
I love the word.
Is there one illusion that you perform that meets that criteria of both tracks the most? In other words, your skill, your talent, your art, and the impact on the audience in connecting with them and awing them or having them in awe of you.
Yes, I have a few pieces that embody those criteria, but the most powerful one is one that I've always been closing my parlor show, my smaller stand-up show, with for the past 2 years, and I call that the puzzle of life. In this show, it's going to be present. I'm performing it, but it's not closing the show because I'm closing the show with the water tank escape this time, which means that I will be completely wet after the tank, and I won't be able or it will not be easy to perform another piece looking decent. So it's going to be the penultimate piece. But the puzzle of life, which is that piece that you just asked about, is both a piece of magic, but with a very strong story attached to it. And I'm very actually happy. And I would say happy is the right word to say that I've made a lot of people cry with that piece. I've had so many guests come up to me after the show and tell me, you made me cry because that's exactly what I needed to hear today. Whether they lost a person or they were lost in their careers or they didn't know exactly what to do or something challenging happened that day or that month or that year, that was the piece that kind of touched them, that resonated with them. And that's why I want to keep it in my show.
Where did you learn to set the tone with an audience?
Oh,
and just that one where you hit, obviously they come up to you after the show and they say, you really touched me. Where did you learn to know to set that tone with an audience?
I think I learned it during my childhood for a very specific reason. I shouldn't say this, but I will. There was a point in my life that I became completely invisible for my parents. And I was non-existent, which is also, I think, one of the reasons why I was drawn to magic, because I was able to not shine, not be better than the rest, but I was just visible to the people around me. And I made it a very important thing for me to listen to people around me. I'm very aware of my surroundings. When I talk to someone, I want to listen. I'm in their moment and it's about them. And that's also what my show is about. It's a you-focused show. And by listening, not just to the people around me, but in this specific case as a performer, to my audience, I've learned to know what they like, what they don't like, what is accurate, what is not accurate or appropriate. And that's very important to me. I always compare the experience. And I remember talking about that with Siegfried when he was still with us, that, you know, the performance is like two heartbeats. You have mine on one hand, you have the audience's heartbeat, and we start with two different rhythms. And my goal is to reach a unified rhythm at the end of the show. So it's all about listening to the audience. That to me is one of the most important factors.
You said something a moment ago too, which I think what you were saying is, and you're present for the audience. You're, when you took up magic, you were not to shine above anybody else, but just to be present. You were in essence validating your own presence by being present.
That is correct. Yes.
So I know that you're really good about meeting people after the show, but since your last act is involving water, Do people come and bring you towels after the show?
That's a great thing. I should put that into the advertising.
Yeah, or maybe sell towels at the store
Break.
After the show, and then they can give you the towel you can dry off while you talk to them.
A great idea. Now, what we've done, I started touring with the water tank this year, actually, and while we're doing it in Europe, granted the conditions were different. As soon as I'm done with the water tank, I'm rushing backstage and I need 3 to 4 minutes to kind of get ready so I can go back out into the audience and take pictures and sign autographs. My hair is obviously wet, but it's okay. Given that Vegas is a much faster market and people come to see the show and they have to rush to the next project, whatever they have, because they only have 2 to 3 days in this city, I don't know that that's going to work, but it is definitely something I'm going to try. So as soon as I'm done on stage, rush off stage, get ready, change, and then go into the audience, hoping that we can still talk to the people.
I assume there's an announcement or some way of communicating to the audience that it'll take a few minutes for you to dry off. Hang in there, be patient, and you'll be able to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was the most unusual person you've encountered or story you've encountered meeting someone backstage, whether it's here in Las Vegas or around the world as you travel and perform? Is there one thing that jumps out at you that stuck with you after all these years?
I've met so many fascinating, interesting people. Some of them I'm still friends or acquaintance with. The inventor of Siri, for instance. Some major actors that have become friends. Some, I call them regulars, non-performers. That I've met for various reasons and in various contexts that have fascinated me on many, many levels. And that's something I'm very grateful for. But there's not really one, I wouldn't say there's not one person that stands out. I will still go back to 96 when I came to Vegas as a tourist and I saw Siegfried and Roy's show for the first time. My very first encounter with Siegfried was very, very powerful, very magical. And we became friends very quickly, and we were friends until he passed away. But I think that would be one of the most memorable encounters that I've had. The way Siegfried talked to people, the way he treated people, even as this royalty of magic, is something that really that moved me very deeply. All the time, whenever we were hanging out, having dinner, lunch, whatever, and people would approach him, even 10, 15 years after the show at the Mirage had closed, he was gracious. He made them shine. He focused on them. He made them feel like they were the most important people on the planet. And that, I think that would still be one of the most touching moments. And another one was way more intense. That was with David Copperfield in the 90s in Europe. So that was, David was amazing that night. So those two are related to people that I obviously that are in my industry, but there have been many other people that I've met that were fascinating.
Did you find, and I know I asked you this when you were on the show before, and we've talked many times, did you find that your welcome to Las Vegas was warm because you were coming into a world of magic that existed in Las Vegas at that time? And I have found, and I know there's rivalries and there's pettiness that goes around in show business, but I would think within the magic community, if you're a new magician, meaning new to Las Vegas, and you're coming in on an ongoing basis, that there's going to be some support from the local magician.
Yes. As you may remember, when I moved to Vegas, I was still married to Abby, who had an accident with me. We both had an accident in 2015. And Abby was, sadly still is, wheelchair bound. And so I moved to Vegas. I dived into the show. And that was our main focus, taking care of Abby and doing the show. And I didn't really have a chance to go out and meet with other colleagues and potential friends. That all happened later. But I have been welcomed by many, many magicians and other people from the industry who came and saw the show, who were very kind to me, who made me feel like I belonged here. And even now that I announced the reopening of the show, I have colleagues who reached out to me via text or even calling me and told me, "We're so happy for you. This is so great." And yes, so that's been the case. It's a very heartwarming feeling, actually.
Do you think that what you learned from mentors and that you may pass on to others too, and because of your unique background and as you mentioned about your parents and what Siegfried talked to you about as well, do you think that most magicians, and I'm not asking for a specific, but do you think most magicians, not just in Las Vegas, but in general, understand that concept of focusing on the audience, focusing on the person outside of themselves, and really making it special? Because I was thinking when you were telling us that just a moment ago, it may not mean as much to you, but the fact that you talked to somebody after the show and you focused on them, they will remember that for a long, long time.
Yes.
Generally speaking, they don't get a chance to see someone important in their eyes and get a chance to have an actual conversation. They may have a meet and greet, but it's very quick and it's very take a picture, shake your hand and move on type thing. But if you can make a human connection, not only are they going to remember you, they're going to tell their friends and relatives, "Hey, I was in Las Vegas and I saw David Goldrake, and he is not only a wonderful magician, but he took the time to talk with me and made an impact." So I guess that's a long question, but back to the beginning of it. Do you think that other magicians understand that concept?
I believe the good ones do. The good magicians, and that goes not just for magicians, but performers in general. I think that everyone who has reached a certain level probably has done so thanks to that element. Because that's what makes the audience care about you. I have encountered people throughout my career that would tell me, "Oh, I saw so-and-so when I was that age." And either they were super kind and that's why I'm here because I love magic, or, you know, it was such a bad encounter. I really hate magic, but I still, you know, I came with my friends. Right. And to confirm your point, it does impact people. And it took me a long time to realize that not just on stage, but off stage in our everyday lives, a smile, a gentle touch, and a gesture, anything can impact someone's life for decades in a good or bad way. And that's really important. And I think that the actual good performers, if we stick to the live performances, because if you look at movies, you know, there's just an intangible screen. But if you have theater people or performance people in general that have that, I think those are the successful ones, the good ones.
I think it's hard, and I want to give due diligence in a sense to, or due recognition, that might be a better term, to those performers who may not understand it because they set themselves apart because they're on the stage, the lights are on them, they're not the audience. So you can get a very inaccurate picture of your spot in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't blame people for not doing what you do because the ego gets involved and, hey, I'm on stage and you're not, and therefore I'm better than you, and therefore there's no point in getting too relatable to people afterwards or even at the supermarket type thing.
I do it by design. Some performers, actually, I have friends of mine who are gems in real life, but they decided to have this aloof persona. And I have it to some extent. I've been told that sometimes I come across as aloof on stage, but then when they meet me off stage, it's like, you're a different person. I think that that's, you know, some people do it by design. Some people also, after a certain level, you know, there are performers who are really very, very famous, as you know, and these people, they want to protect themselves too. So I think there's this protective mechanism as well that just goes to, no, leave me alone. I want to have my personal life and I want to have my stage life, and I'll give you the minutes that I want to give you under my terms, on my terms, which is also, I think, justified and understandable.
I remember when Lance Burton was at the Tropicana initially as a specialty act, and then he went on to perform at the Hacienda and then eventually moved up to Monte Carlo. His act initially was this mysterious aloofness on stage. He's
remember.
A wonderful person. I've known him for years. And he obviously, as you said, when you develop and evolve, then he became more warm and friendly on stage. He wasn't that mysterious man of mystery that we have.
That is correct. That is correct.
Right. And so, I mean, it worked for him either way because he's just a great guy. I've seen him do stuff away from the crowd, away from the, that. He's a really great human being.
Yes.
But I was thinking of him as an example of people that are great in person and initially started out one way and then changed over the years. I always thought of him as young Christopher Plummer. For those who remember Christopher Plummer, especially from The Sound of Music, I always kidded Lance about that. I always thought he had that look about him. And he's still a good-looking guy today. He's still performing today, going all over the place and still performing.
Yes, he is. He is.
So kudos to him. But kudos to you for getting a gig here in Las Vegas where people can see you. And I think that you have an advantage here, too. And I'll
please do tell.
Yeah, if you disagree with me, let me know. Because of your international reputation, you've been touring for a long time. People know who you are. So you'll get the visitors that come to Las Vegas. But because you've been performing in Las Vegas for many years, there's locals that know of you and know you too.
So I hope you're right. I hope they remember.
I think you're going to get a nice mix of people. Well, what's the word gets out that you're performing locally here again at the Link Promenade? And that's Fridays through Tuesdays at 8:30. Fridays through Tuesdays at 8:30. And do you think that when you take a few days off that you get a little rusty, or do you, or is it so much in you that you still do a minor rehearsal to kind of get back up to speed?
No, at some point it's a lot of the material that I perform has become second nature because it's a daily repetition, including rehearsals. And the days off, as you call them, are the days where we take care of the rest of the business, you know, the administration, the marketing, the PR, the sales, improving the existing material, creating new material. So in our industry, and I love that, there are no days off. It's a continuous process, and I love it. I think I'll love it till the end of my days.
Now, there are rumors, too, that it's so in your blood and so part of your subconscious that when you wake up in the morning, your bed disappears.
Maybe I'll have to check that. I've never paid attention.
Yeah, and then it reappears at night when you're ready to hit the sack.
Excellent.
I want to get back to your performance. Would you like to share with our audience? We have a couple minutes left. We have about 5 minutes left or so. Would you like to share with the audience your approach to this show? Because it's a different venue now, Promenade at Link, or Link Promenade, either way you want to say it, Tuesdays through Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Are there elements to the show that are new to it that were not there the last time you performed in Las Vegas, or is it a mix of a couple different things?
There are new pieces in the show that I have not performed yet here. Like I said, the stage is much smaller than the one at the Tropicana, so the big illusions are mostly out. But I was able to create and adapt some of that material, or recreate some of the material and adapt it to that size of the stage. So the audience will be able to see some pieces that remind them of what I did at the Tropicana. Some of the themes are still present, but some of the material will be brand new. We did a big version of the water tank at the Tropicana with four people surrounding me and so forth and so on. I was able to create a new version of it that only involves my assistant and my stagehand, and is way smaller and way compact. At the same time, it looks much more dangerous. So there have been a lot of adaptations and changes to the show, and I think the audience will enjoy the new show. We also have a list of material that is going to be incorporated in the show for the next weeks, respectively months. So by March, we should have a brand new show.
When you find out that in the audience are a group from another country, of which language you speak, would you insert a little of that particular language into the act?
Always. And if I have someone on stage that speaks a different language, and if I know the hello or thank you or whatever word it is in that language, I will use it. I've been very fortunate to tour all over the world, over 40 something countries. And I think I do know hello and thank you and you're welcome and goodbye in 50, 60 languages. So every time someone comes on stage that looks from a place I might recognize, I will ask. And if not, I will still ask if I recognize an accent. And if they tell me, I will speak the few words in their language just to make them welcome and to make that connection that is so important to me.
So what you're saying is you could say, hey, Siri, in seven languages.
Absolutely.
Now, when you come out on stage and you have a crew and you have an assistant, do you feel... I don't know if the word is comfortable, but does it give you a sense of comfort? Maybe that's the better term. Having that support of people that you know and you trust and you have a relationship with. So they've got your back. So if perchance something goes slightly wrong and you have to adjust it, they can adjust as well.
Yes, that is extremely important to me, especially for some acts that do involve danger. The connection, the confidence, the trust are extremely important factors to me. And that's why when I select the people that I worked with, I'm really careful. I scrutinize them. And I'm all about the personal connection before the professional connection. I want the person to be aware of the fact that this is not just a job, but this is a mutual adventure. That's a good way of saying it, but that it involves the risks that it involves, and that we are on the same team and that we need to be able to rely on each other.
It's also not just an adventure. It's a way of life. So they have to understand that.
Absolutely.
As you, as the main leader of that's yes. Your way of life. So yeah, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been the International Man of Mystery, but not aloof. The International Man of Mystery, David Goldrake. He's performing Fridays through Tuesdays at 8:30 at the new Magician's Room at the Link Promenade. For ticket information, go to magiciansroom.com. And for everything about David, you go to davidgoldrake.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. But David, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you so much, Ira. It was a pleasure.
Same here. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Be Las Vegas. Anything you want us to be.